Respiratory system. We're talking about the upper respiratory system today. Open GarageBand is recording. Record GarageBand. Good. Good. All right. So much for the respiratory quiz. Let's move on. So, lungs. But yes, ma'am. Let me find out what the you guys sound pretty divided. Right? I see no overwhelming one way or the other. Let's see what the afternoon class was, okay? I was planning on 8, but I got a few deer in the headlight looks, and that kind of scared me. Okay? If you do well, I would like to give you 8 points. If you pull that, I want to give you 4. That's what I'm
saying. Is it the same quiz for them?
I'm not going to tell you that.
And if it is, they're going to
get involved. Maybe not. Then I would often do 2 separate quizzes. Or something's ass, right? When have I ever given them the same thing that you guys have? Three, I don't know if I ever have. You have the same scenario, class exercises, that's about it. Everything else is, I write 4 different exams. 2 completely separate, then I mix them up. Okay? Okay, we're going to talk a little bit. What about breathing? What about this whole thing about breathing? Okay, now you have some refresher on the anatomy. If you've done it before you came in, awesome. If you didn't, well, now you do. Okay? So what happens when we breathe? What's going on? Yeah. That is, that's respiration. There's a difference between ventilation and respiration. Anybody know what the difference between ventilation and respiration is? Yeah. So what Victoria was saying, what Victoria described as exchange of molecules, it happens in 2 places, right? Where does it happen? Capillary beds and the alveoli, exactly, in the lungs. Okay, that is respiration. Ventilation is, Rebecca, what's ventilation? The actual physical, mechanical act of breathing. Right? When we ventilate, okay, take in a breath, right? What happens to the diaphragm? Does it? Think about that. What happens to the diaphragm when you take in a breath? Isn't anybody Googling it? Come on, guys. Yeah, you can hear this. This is supposed to be. This is supposed to be all salivating in the information. Yeah. Yes, yeah. This one, guess. Yeah.
Salt.
Yeah. Salt. Yeah.
And
then what happens when you let it out?
Relax
it. Does it go up and down? Right down in the box. Good question, huh?
Can you confirm these?
Anybody have a good website that they can have? A nice picture that they've found yet that we can put up? Got one? Anyone? Oh, I was hoping that someone may have had a nice diagram or something that they found. And we can put it on the screen. Anybody find anything good? No? No answers? I'm going to let you answer it. Right. And we can discuss it next time. Today we're going to talk about some disorders, unless anybody comes across the question of where does the diaphragm move during ventilation? Exhalation is the relaxation. Inspiration is the active process.
When you breathe in or inhale, do the contraction and flatten
the leg. Inhale, it flattens. And so you exhale, it goes up. I think you said correct. And anybody get any cool graphics on there? And maybe a little video that happened. I'd love to do a video. Do you? You have something cool? Can you put it up? Is it a little loud?
Okay.
Let's do this. doesn't fit. Do you have a... Let me get rid of this and see if I can get to that. If I am terribly clever and can get to that URL that you found. That would be nice. Government health topics. Oh, what's that? There, that's beautiful. Where is that? That looks very nice. Okay, what is it? What did you Google it? What did you look for?
3D video diagram.
3D view. 3D view?
I just Googled mechanism of breathing diaphragm. It's the first video.
I put 3D view a diaphragm.
Yeah,
that's 3D view of diaphragm. Here you go. Yeah. Let's see. Thank you. This one looks better. Let's have a look at it. Let's watch it. Come on. It's loading. Let's see if I can be extremely clever and hook in this, which I'm never able to. Let's watch breathing. Which is really a full fascinating.
The video breathing movements show.
Okay. Okay, we have disease states that certainly impair ventilation, right? And they may impair ventilation at all different levels. As simple as the nose, right? That's rhinitis, okay? Nasal problems, very simple, okay? Common respiratory infections is an upper respiratory infection, which would be a common cold, generally caused by a virus. Okay? You're feeling it in your sinuses, in your nose. Rhinitis, inflammation of the nasal cavities, correct? That impairs your breathing, doesn't it? What about sinus conditioning? Anybody have allergy? Right. Anybody have problems breathing this morning? I'll look at them. Right? Definitely problems. Common cold is the most common respiratory tract infection. Highly contagious. Peak incidence in September, late January, and late April. Do you see any trend here? What happens in September? Fall, and everybody comes back to school, right? What happens in late January? You get back from your semester break, don't you? And what happens in April? Well, we have our early semester break. People come back from spring break. Okay? Somehow it really coincides well with the collegiate calendar and the academic calendar. Local inflammatory response. Okay? In the nose. Swelling of the mucous membranes and nasal passages. Hyperactivity of mucus secreting glands, obviously, right? You're blowing your nose, you're sneezing, you're carrying on. Immunity is produced only to the individual virus. So, if your roommate has a cold and you catch it, is she going to get it back from you, that same virus? Probably not, because you have memory B cells, right? That will give you some immunity for an undetermined length of time. Probably, you can probably depend on it for a couple of weeks. So you're thinking, why did they say, oh, we pass this cold back and forth in our family? Is that it? We've heard people say that. Is that an accurate representation of what's going on? What's really going on, do you think? What you thought? What's really going on when people say that? And I'm sure it's true. People are sick. Is it? Yes, no.
It's a different strain.
Yeah, it's a different virus. And why would that happen? Why would a different virus suddenly come in the baby's household? Something that we learned earlier in the semester? What happened to that hepatic cold? You're immunosuppressed, right? So you're going to be more susceptible to the next virus that comes along. So it may seem like your family is passing a virus back and forth, but that's probably not the case. because you're going to have some immunity. But nonetheless, you're going to be somewhat immunosuppressed. Right? So it is important that people take care of themselves, drink a lot of fluids, right? Rest when they have a cold. Change their toothbrushes. Right? Okay. Don't let germs hang around the house. You know all this, sore throat, coughing. You know very well what an upper respiratory infection does to you, right? We've all experienced these things. Respiratory syncytial virus, or RSV. Alright, it's a common cold in older children and adults. Now this is a cold that can go into something that can be very severe. It's a severe respiratory illness. Can even cause death in immunocompromised people. We see it in adults, and it's real scary. Children die from it. And when you get into pediatrics, I'm sure you'll have a little more on RSV. Very common in the pediatric population. We do see it in adults. It's a severe upper respiratory infection. A super bug that can come in and be very destructive. It's not generally a virus, so antibiotics aren't going to do any good, are they? So we don't have a lot to fight it. You'll see people in the hospital. Transmission is the same as other upper respiratory infections. Incubation period, 4 to 5 days. Adult manifestations, they're the same, all right? But in older adults, immunosuppressed people, infants, it can go into fever, pneumonia, infants, pneumonia, bronchitis, tracheal bronchitis. So it's kind of like your super cold. It can get really bad. So yeah, a cold is generally a minor occurrence in our lives. We all have one or two a year. Take it in stride, right? A little NyQuil, that's my drug of choice. I like DayQuil too. And we make it through. Another reason why you should instruct your patients, particularly those who are elderly, to take good care of their health, take good care of themselves. Limit their exposure and be strong so that they can fight off these viruses. Now, influenza is a little different. We've all had our flu vaccines, and hopefully we're not getting hit with it too hard yet this year. Highly contagious, upper respiratory infection, epidemics or pandemics, right? Pandemics means a widespread group of the populace is infected. Avian flu is an example of a pandemic. And we've seen those in our population, right? Airborne, droplets, and direct contact. Three major influenzas, A, B, and C. The flu vaccines are made up of many different types of flus. They change every year, which is why you have to get a new vaccination every year. The CDC puts out what they think is going to be flu viruses that will be in our population. And the vaccines are developed from that prognosis. Think is going to happen. But they may be wrong, right? So occasionally a flu virus slips in and there's a pandemic, whether or not people have had the vaccine. Incubation for the flu is only 18 to 72 hours. Okay. So it could be less than a day after exposure. Could be 4 days. Invades the respiratory epithelium, rapidly spreads to neighboring cells. And again, remember when we talked about infection? What are we doing? It's a race, right? How fast can the bug multiply versus your fighting mechanisms within your body? How fast can the body mass this attack against them? The stronger you are, the quicker your body's going to be able to respond. The less dramatic the flu is going to be, or any kind of infection, because it's not going to have the ability to reproduce at great rates. Conversely, if you're immunosuppressed, you're not going to be able to mass the defenses against any kind of invasion in your body, and you're going to get sicker. Right? Same deal. So that basic concept carries through to many different, most parts of health as far as any kind of invasion. Inflammation leads to necrosis, shedding of serous and ciliated cells of the respiratory tract. You can get uncomplicated nasopharyngeal infections. You can get upper respiratory infections followed by a bacterial infection. Now, how is that going to happen? If this is a viral infection, why is it followed by a bacterial infection? which commonly happens. Right, you're immunosuppressed, and then you're a sitting duck for any bacterial infection that comes your way, or an opportunistic infection, meaning it already exists within your body. So some of these concepts from our lecture on immunity should start coming forward. They relate directly to the acquisition of upper respiratory infections and the fighting, right, how our bodies respond. Bacterial infection is common. I'm sure most of you have had bronchitis after a bad cold, right? Or a flu that just lingers on. It goes into bronchitis and you're just sick and possibly pneumonia. And if you're terribly immunosuppressed, you won't recover. Again, which is why pneumonia is such a high cause of death. Because, yes, people die from pneumonia. And it could be as simple as the flu. Or a common cold. Okay. Rapid onset, malaise in minutes. Chills, fever, muscle aches, headaches, a little different than a cold. Right? A little different presentation. Dry, unproductive cough, right, that can go on for weeks sometimes. Okay. Cough severe, productive, days or weeks. And you all have experienced this. And complications. We just discussed secondary bacterial infections, certainly. Sinusitis, you get sinus infections. That's not an uncommon, that is a common complication. Otitis media, what's that? Ear infections, right. Tracheobronchitis, yeah, right. Or me, I tend to get laryngitis. That's my weak spot, I can't talk. Okay. As we said, increasing risk of development of pneumonia, sinusitis. What is sinusitis? Anybody had sinusitis? Kind of a weird word, right? Yeah, tell us about your sinusitis. Yeah, sure.
I don't know. I had actually
during
spring break, and my friends had been back in the
felt like you were what?
Tired.
Yeah. Sinus rinse. Okay, so she felt a lot of pressure. Sure, the sinuses are here, right? They're cavities, aren't they? So if they're full, you're going to feel the pressure. So they're full and inflamed, right? They're infected. And then a common treatment is a sinus rinse, right? Isn't that kind of gross? Yeah. You want to explain what a sinus rinse is? It's kind of like a nasal enema thing. So you're actually rinsing the sinus cavities by forcing normal saline, probably, yeah, up into, or water, I know, yeah, into the nasal cavities and having them flush. But it probably really helped, right? Yeah, it did, because then we're flushing out all the old cells and the bacteria or viruses in there. Okay. Nasal, purulent nasal discharge, bad breath, does that all sound familiar? The sinusitis, very common. Pharyngitis, tonsillitis, I'm sure you've all experienced that as well. Inflammation of the pharynx, inflammation of the tonsils, right, due to a bacterial infection. Okay, bacterial. We see exudate on the tonsils, common malignancy, tonsillitis. Droplet, few hours to several days, depending on the culprit. What kind of bug you have, it's going to be very virulent, very strong. It's going to come on quickly multiply, or maybe it's a little weaker bug. It's not going to be so bad. And again, your response has a lot to do with how strong you are or your patient. 3 to 10 days, got it. How about strep? Strep throat. A little different, right? Streptococci. High fever, sore throat. Malaise. Okay. Definitely enlargement of lymph nodes. That makes sense. Strep throat. And we do we like to medicate right away for strep throat, right? We usually give people antibiotics. And what's the test? Pretty quick test for strep. You've all had it. A swab, yeah. We have rapid strep tests that usually we can find out is it immediate or very soon. Don't have to wait 2 days. We touched on some of the complications from strep throat when we were talking about the heart. Anybody remember? Remember? What does streptococcal virus or bacteria can do? Yes. Who's talking? Yes, it can cause dramatic fever. Thank you. Streptococcus is a rash. Okay, from the strep throat, you can get a rash, and then it goes into rheumatic fever. What's the complication for rheumatic fever that is a heart problem long term? Remember? I know it was 2 weeks ago, it's so long. Remember, so much information. Valvular disease, okay? Valvular heart valves can become affected by streptococcal bacteria. They can start out as just a sore throat. Okay, so that's why we are so diligent about testing for strep and not letting you in the hospital if you have an active strep infection. 24 hours with antibiotics, you're no longer you can't infect anybody. You're no longer contagious. But if you have strep, you're not going in the hospital. Highly contagious. And yes, this is when we absolutely medicate. By the way, I'm not going to wait for your body to find it. Yes.
So after you medicate 24 hours,
you're not contagious. Yeah. Generally. So know that for yourselves and for your patients. Generally 24 hours. And you can return to work. And usually, if you catch it quickly, you're usually feeling much better after 24 hours of antibiotic therapy. These symptoms are all going away. And this brings up another question about nurses working sick. If nurses didn't go to the hospital, I had one infectious control doc say to me off the record, if we all didn't go in when we're sick, the hospitals would shut down. If every nurse and doctor took off when they had any kind of a little bug, we couldn't operate. Yet, at Marin General, I had a student that had a sniffle, and I just told her, well, be sure to wear your mask around your patient. And the unit clerk ratted on her and called the infectious disease doctor, and she was sent home. Because in reality, that's true, right? Ideally, we shouldn't work at all when we're sick. But do we? Yeah, all the time. We do. We can't afford the days off. All of us. The patient needs us. They're short. Da 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 da. Yeah. So that is a problem. That would be a very interesting evidence-based project for you guys. Is nurses working sick? And it might be something you might want to look at in your clinical environments. Are people sick? Are they careful? If I have a stethoscope, I'm really careful. I stay away from the patients. I wear more gloves. I wash my hands more. I don't touch my face. And if I'm feeling at all, not myself. Pharyngitis manifests slowly, low-grade fever, sore throat, hoarseness, headache. What's this? Runny nose. Good. Tonsillitis, sore throat, difficulty swallowing, you've all had this. Kind of ear pain, white excretate is common on the tonsils. Pressing on the tonsils, you get a purulent discharge. Lymph nodes, okay. You know all this, you've had it. Bacterial pharyngitis, you can have complications of an abscess, scarlet fever. Yeah, here we go. Rheumatic fever, scarlet fever, toxic shock. Epiglottitis, you can have the epiglottis also be infected. It can be infected as cellulitis, which is interesting. So that's the tissue itself being affected. This is something a little different. But the problem here is that it's a medical emergency, because if the airway, if it's the tissue, right, in the airway that's inflamed, and it swells, what's going to happen to the airway? Going to close off. So these simple little bugs that we don't think much of and we kind of brush off can become extremely problematic if the infection then becomes cellular in the skin cells and the tissue swells and can't breathe, right? So be aware of all these complications of a simple little virus, flu or cold. Okay? Push it against the epiglottis posteriorly and possible airway obstruction. Okay. obviously pain for swallowing, feeling, stridor. Laryngitis, know about that, right? Common complication of a URI, upper respiratory infection. Can be chronic or acute. Mucous membranes of the larynx are inflamed. Change of voice, harsh, scratchy. Many of you have experienced this. Diphtheria. Now here's something completely different. A contagious disease caused by Cornibacterium diphtheria is the culprit. Uncommon in the U.S. We generally don't see it, but if you travel, you will receive vaccines, right, for diphtheria? Yeah, it's common in other countries. So know that. I know that there are a lot of international opportunities becoming available to you. Right? Costa Rica and Uganda again? Right? Isn't the Nursing Department offering trips to those countries? My guess is you'll need a diphtheria vaccine. And you may see it in your travels. Is that right? Diphtheria, Uganda and Costa Rica? Huh? Where? H between the P and the T. Yeah. There we go. Right. Not on this one. Yep. Thank you. Isn't he brilliant? Thanks very much. We'll have to write Dr. Lemon. These are her slides. Okay. Tonsils, thick, rich, rubbery, Pseudomonas forms over. Pseudomembrane forms over the posterior of the pharynx and the trachea, the diphtheria. It can be very serious. How about whooping cough? Pertussis. You've all been vaccinated for it, right? Yep. Why is it making a comeback in our society these days? Why are we seeing it in the pediatric population? I'm sure you'll talk about this from different peds. Why are we seeing it? Community are not getting immunized for various reasons. Immigrants, yeah.
No.
Pardon me?
They're not
getting their immunizations. Children are not getting immunized, or because parents are afraid of immunization. I remember being in a pediatrician's office with my children, and it was a kid there with whooping cough. You will never forget whooping cough if you heard it. It's horrible. It's horrible. Gasping for air, kind of coughing. It's really bad. And that was simply a parent who was afraid of the vaccine. Because if you look up the stats on vaccines, there are a very small percent of children that react to the vaccine and end up in a fatal situation. So there is a, with every vaccine, there's a little risk. So there was a trend several years ago not to vaccinate. So I know currently among the immigrant population, there's a big campaign to make sure that we do vaccinate against whooping cough, that the children are vaccinated. And adults too, yeah, can hit adults. Pertussis. Predictable pattern begins with a typical upper respiratory infection, 2 to 3 weeks, but the cough doesn't get better, it becomes worse. All right, you get these spasms after you're coughing. Frequent, so bad that people are vomiting. It's an absolute horrible cough. It's very deadly. Immunization is the best thing we can do for it. We give erythromycin, and then we also give it prophylactically to everybody in the household to make sure they don't get it. Respiratory isolation until 5 days after antibiotics. This is such a virulent bug that we keep people isolated for 5 days after they begin therapy. How about a nosebleed? This ties in a little bit to our blood lecture from last week. People with bleeding disorders, an upset in that clotting cascade, a lack of vitamin K, maybe, are susceptible to nosebleeds. Another problem you may see. What's the problem in hospitals if people are having nosebleeds?
hypertension. Actually, it'd be hypotension because they're losing a lot of blood. That's the problem. It's a loss of blood, right? Particularly someone after surgery, they've got a lot of anticoagulants. Yes. Yeah, I see what you're saying. That's not a complication of the nosebleed. That would be a causation. A causation, sure. Yes, good point, Victoria. High blood pressure is going to cause what? Those delicate capillaries in the nasal passages to burst. And you're going to get epitaxis. So nosebleeds are not something that... Sure, if he falls on his nose, he gets a little nosebleed. We know the cause. If you're seeing it in your general population, if you're seeing it in the adult population, question it. Why are we having nosebleed? Are we doing a lot of anticoagulants? Maybe. No? And sometimes it can be a problem. Was there a lot of blood loss from surgery? And now we're having now the nose is bleeding? And what's going on? Okay? Is the pressure too high? What's going on with it? That's the first thing I would do. Yes, check blood pressure in the general patient. Definitely. All right? So be aware of nosebleeds. It's not like when you were a kid and bumped your nose. When you're working with adults in the hospital setting or the geriatric population, certainly consider them much more serious. And that's the whole point of kind of discussing nosebleeds. Kieselbach area, which is the anteronasal septum, susceptible to trauma, drying, infection. Posterior nosebleeds, you have different arteries involved. And here we have blood, clotting issues, hypertension, diabetes. So take nosebleeds seriously. Posterior nosebleeds are more severe and more common in adults. And obviously bleeding from the nares. And nausea and vomiting may follow from swallowing all the blood. So your lady had a nosebleed? Mm-hmm. And was it taken pretty seriously? I mean, how was it?
Well, our place is weird because there's one LVN for communication for each row, SADN, and we pulled, she just had the tissues and blood all over them. And she was demented, lightly demented, so she was all, she was just saying weird things.
So for her.
So it was really high for her, someone told the nurse, but I never saw it. So.
But do take it seriously in your own practices, because it can be, certainly. Sometimes it's so bad that we cauterize the vessels. Okay? Or a ligation, we tie them off. Nasal trauma, broken facial bones. Anybody had anybody with a broken face yet? No trauma. We're getting a lot of trauma at Santa Rosa. It's interesting. A lot of gunshot wounds. Interesting population up there. We're having a good time. Broken noses. Now, somebody in this room must have broken their nose. Come on, you guys. You're all academics. You don't get out there and break your nose. Where are our softball players? Come on, I know we have some softball players. Nobody? No broken noses. Well, I should pull up a picture of my beautiful son, James Kelly, if you want to Google him, who has an absolutely gorgeous nose that is quite obviously broken. I think he's done it about 5 times. So he looks like now he looks like this Irish hood, you know. He's got this. He does. He looks like he's from the gangs of New York. What was that? The Irish hood. That's what he looks like. Because commonly trauma, you're going to break your nose. And the problem with breaking your nose is a deviated septum. You want the nasal passages, you want to make sure they're clear. Often the septum doesn't grow together again. It's going to grow like this, which could cause some occlusion of the nasal passages. You got James up there yet?
Yeah.
You see his broken nose?
No.
Look at the arbor picture. Look at your arbor boards and teammates and James Kelly. That's his best. You can see it. If you look real closely, he's supposed to have a nice straight nose. He's broken about 5 times, skating into poles and various other things. Okay. So, complications can be a septal hematoma, obviously, right? Abscesses, septal perforation, the septum, okay, which is the part between the two nares, can be perforated. We can have some cerebral spinal fluid leaking in the nose. So if you're seeing clear, can we add to the nose after nasal trauma? And it's not mucus. It could be cerebrospinal fluid. So that's important. All right. So facial trauma can be a huge deal. Even just James breaking his nose. Yeah. Okay. Let's see what else. The cerebral spinal fluid leaking. That's our main thing. Cerebral spinal fluid, if we test it for glucose, it's positive. So we do have little, like, paper tests. It'll change color if there's glucose in the solution, and that's how we test for cerebral spinal fluid coming out of the nose. Because if there's this clear fluid coming out of the nose, how are you going to know what it is? But if it's positive for glucose, then it's cerebral spinal fluid, which is very interesting. So nasal trauma, obviously going to get nosebleeds, hematoma. You can get preorbital edema, all right? Big black and blue spots underneath the eyes. Have you seen any of your Jerry patients fallen down and had some facial trauma? Yeah, they get these black eyes, bony crepitus fractures. So not only are there athletes or people that are really active, break their noses, but the general population falls on their face a lot. Have you had any patients that have fallen on their face in your drug rotations? Anybody? No? My mother did recently. Yeah, did you? Did somebody fall? Yeah? Right. And they search her eyes. Yeah, black and blue. Mm-hmm. Poor lady. Yeah. So be aware of the complications. We're worried about cerebral spinal fluid leakage, hematoma, all these problems that can occur. You can have unilateral fractures on one side of the nose, and that can cause a cosmetic disformity, like in James. But bilateral fractures are more common. Okay, and we talked about the complications. Sleep apnea. Who knows about sleep apnea? Anybody have any dads? Your fathers are about at the ages where they're starting to have some problems with sleep apnea. Yeah? Tell us about your dad. Is it your dad, or am I guessing?
My dad.
Is it? Yeah, that's
your. He always snores, so my mom found out this album, he's like, when you go to the doctor, you have to hear from my room.
Which is like way down the hall, right?
Yeah. So,
your mother hasn't slept in 10 years, right? Yeah, tell us about the CPAP. So your father had snored for years, finally got so bad your mother couldn't stand anymore, and he went for a sleep study.
Yeah.
Right? He looks like Darth Vader with the, yeah.
And so,
what does it do?
What
does it mean? Yeah, it forces air in. It is a form of ventilator. And then I bet he was much happier. Oh, really? Yeah, that's amazing. That's great. Now he doesn't snore, everybody in the house can sleep?
No, he says my mom sleeps.
Oh, which is probably true. Nothing worse than a convert, right? So what it's doing is it's forcing air in, and what's happening with these people with sleep apnea, they are waking up maybe 100 times a night. Okay, they're coming to consciousness even though they might not be aware of it. So what's happening to their quality of sleep? Bad, right? Really bad. Have you seen any of these CPAP machines in the hospitals? Have you gone in? Yeah. I'm sorry. Yeah. So you, a CPAP. So you walk in the morning and they've got this Darth Vader mask on. You're going, what in the heck is this? Right? Is that what happened?
Well, I didn't do that.
Okay. Good for you. You weren't surprised, yeah. I used to do it all the time. I didn't know what they were. And I'd walk in and go, what's that thing? I was breathing mask. Because patients will commonly bring them to the hospital if it's part of their routine, like you had your dad been hospitalized at that time. So they're waking up like 100 different times a night. Maybe not to full consciousness, but to the point where they're not getting nice, deep sleep. So did you notice a difference in your father once he started sleeping better?
Yeah.
Much less grouchy, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Right, and he's much more pleasant, I'm sure. Because what it is it does, exactly as you said, it regulates the oxygen going in. So these people are getting the oxygen. It's let's see. Central sleep apnea is rare. It's a neurological disorder. What's much more common is obstructive sleep apnea, which is this, generally people with a snoring history have it. It's pharyngeal muscle tone. So the pharynx kind of doesn't have the same tone, and it collapses during inspiration, okay, causing the tongue to pull back, hence the snoring to get air in, all right? So obviously, there's obstruction of the O2 sats, PO2 pH falls, PCO2 rises. So there's an increase in carbon dioxide. Asphyxiation causes a brief arousal from sleep. So the CO2 rises in the blood, and these people are like, they're not getting enough oxygen, so then they're aroused, and then they start breathing again. Do you remember how his snoring was? Do you remember all of a sudden he'd go, right? He'd like, yeah, because he got to the point where the pH has fallen and the PO2 is risen and the PCO2 is risen. So there's a lot of carbon dioxide in the blood, and that's going to cause him to go, you know, kick in that response so they don't have enough oxygen. So that's when they then go, and then that's really loud. And then they wake themselves up, and then they, right, cycles on and on throughout the night. So asphyxia is the cause of a brief arousal from sleep. That they're not getting enough oxygen. Episodes can occur hundreds of times a night. This is a cycle. So we're seeing more and more diagnoses of sleep apnea. I think it says people are becoming more aware of these problems. And we have a more educated population. So I think you're going to see more and more CPAP machines. I seem to be hearing a lot more of it. Maybe it's my age. I'm hearing a lot of it. Loud snoring. Excessive daytime drowsiness, headache, irritability, restless sleep, right? All the above. Yeah. There's a machine. This is a kind of an older one. That's a big one. But yeah, Darth Vader thing happening with a long tube machine that just pushes air in. And so it pushes air in and then the diaphragm just relaxes, and that would be the exhale. It pushes and then allows, okay? And it gears up and it goes down. It makes some changes. It's kind of a cool machine. How about nasal polyps? Grape-like growths. One of my students last week, patient had nasal polyps. Okay, it can interfere with air movement. Can be obstructive openings leading to the sinuses. There can be laryngeal tumors. All right, that can grow from polyps or nodules or papillomas. Occasionally, they can be malignant. But again, if they're removed and detected early, it's not a problem. Malignant meaning cancer, right? Good. And there's laryngeal trauma. All right? Trauma to the larynx. These are all your symptoms. Make all sorts of sense. What about choking? Huh? Remember the Heimlich maneuver? Remember your CPR? You learned all about that, right? This is a universal. People with dysphagia, you're going to see some of this. Does it scare you with the general population? Are they going to choke? It scares me. I mean, I'm always worried. And people in the hospital are commonly coughing. You know, are they choking? So remember your Heimlich maneuver, okay? And there's your Heimlich maneuver on an unconscious victim, just to bring you up to speed. See if I can get. Please be there. Yay. Good. Stop recording.